Tonight on Arena, The County the Lovebirds, When Women Won and Women Make Film are the movies up for review. And where do I start with Stanley Kubrick? Five one double 51551 is the text. You can tweet the programme at RTE Arena. Thursday night means it's movie night here in Arena. We have four new films available to stream direct to your living room from the extreme comfort that is of your very own sofa. The County is an Icelandic tale of rural decline, but with a couple of laughs thrown in, they tell us. The Irish documentary When Women Won tells the story of the Together for Yes campaign, and we look at Mark Cousins' mammoth Women Make Film documentary on film, female filmmaking, lasting hundreds of hours, in fact. But let's start with The Lovebirds, which was scheduled for cinema release last month, but has now made its way onto Netflix. Our reviewers tonight, Sarah Taff McGuire and Stephen Boyd. I suppose, Sarah, can you give me the basic setup at the beginning of this? It looks like it's a romantic comedy, a straightforward romantic comedy, but things get pretty sticky fairly quickly.
Yeah, romantic comedy with a murderous twist, I think is how you describe it. We have Leilani, who is played by Issa Rae, and Gibran, who is Kumail Nanjiani. They're going out. We meet them on their first date 4 years later. They're living together. They're squabbling. They're getting ready to go. They're heading over to a friend's house. They're arguing. They realise they're not meant to be together. They look into each other's eyes and they run a man over. This man is a bicycle driver, and then a stranger comes, hijacks a car, and then goes and runs over the cyclist again, yeah, and again and again. So then they're left in a situation where they've got a dead body in front of them, the actual murder having fled, and then two witnesses looking at them saying, what the hell is going on?
Well, let's listen to a clip, actually, which gives us precisely that moment when, you know, they think it's a police officer that got into the car, by the way, but then he runs over the cyclist three or four times, as you say. So we know we're in a kind of a screwball territory. But here's the moment when the hipsters, played by Catherine Cohen and Barry Rothbart, rather, they're the two witnesses. They come across Issa Rae playing Leilani and Kumail Nanjiani playing Gibran, who are trying to explain what happened, in fact.
We didn't kill him.
Well, he just said he killed him.
No, I said I hit him with my car.
Clearly it worked. You killed the guy with your car.
I was driving and we broke up and I got distracted and I ran through a red light. Just
but then this guy came in. A weird mustache.
I helped him a little bit with my map, which I meant was definitely a mistake.
He took our car. He ran over him.
We need to call
him. And then back and forth 10 times. And now I've got a guy getting blood on me and the car's a fucking murder weapon.
What are you doing?
I'm calling 911.
Please don't do that. We would never hurt anyone.
He'd like to report a murder or whatever.
We didn't murder anybody!
Stop!
You stop! Oh my God, the police aren't gonna believe us. Do you know how stupid we sound?
The citizens arrest.
Okay. What is that?
It's an arrest for the citizens.
Can you do that? Can you do that?
On the count of three, okay?
On the count of three, what? What is that face? I can't reach your face. Just say it.
On the count of three.
What?
1, 2, 3, go!
What?
The guy just ran for it?
Gibran!
Okay, the guy's name is Gibran.
Run, Leilani!
And the girl's name's actually Leilani.
Shit!
Okay, she's running too now. She's just happens to be African-American, and he just happens to be a person of color as well. But I don't, like, think they're murderers because they're minorities. I think they're murderers because they literally just killed a guy and he's playing.
Oh, fuck.
There we go. Catherine Cohen, Barry Rothbart as the two witnesses, and Issa Rae and Kumail Nanjiani as the couple who essentially will take us right through this film, The Lovebirds, the couple being Leilani and Gibran. We get a sense, Stephen Boyd, from that clip, particularly the opening section of it, that it's quite a frantic pace that we're dealing with in terms of, yeah, vocal or verbal delivery at any rate here.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and kind of like you can tell from the clip you just played there, Sean, sometimes it's funny and sometimes it isn't. So like I was smiling during particularly at the end of that clip, but a lot of it I was kind of just watching, and I felt like that while I was watching the film. In some ways it reminds me of an old fashioned kind of screwball comedy. I think you kind of mentioned the word a few minutes ago, and it kind of does almost have that screwball-esque sense to it, where the romance is not really as important as the screwball element. And that, you know, goes right back to the 1930s and, you know, Bringing Up Baby and, you know, crazy films like that. It doesn't really have the romance or the humor, I think, of Nanjiani's last film, which was The Big Sick, which he did with the director Michael Showalter. And it doesn't really, I suppose, you know, hit the high notes of that film, but there are plenty of gags. A lot of it, though, I feel like it's maybe not the most progressive film in the world, even though it's in terms of diversity, it's obviously really at the forefront of that with, you know, it's great to see someone of Pakistani heritage and then someone of Senegalese heritage play in a rom-com like this.
Yeah, I'll come back to you on the specifics of the two stars and what they have done previous to this. But Sarah, that screwball aspect, if you're going to go for screwball comedy, you're going to need to deliver everything fast and furious, but never overlap, because every word is really important and you want to get the jokes. What about the plot here? How screwball is the plot?
Fairly screwball. I mean, there's a lot of dashing around for some reason. So their whole idea of running away doesn't quite make a whole lot of sense. Well, it's not really supposed to. It's just meant to be this madcap comedy. But there's a huge amount of dashing and running for reasons and that get lost fairly quickly. And I mean, that madness can be enjoyable. It can be fun once we have characters that are interesting. And by the way, they do sound interesting. Gibran is a documentary filmmaker, Leilani, a successful advertiser, but we learn kind of very little about them. And as Stephen was mentioning, when we have this dashing, not particularly interesting characters, and then comedy, which just doesn't always land. It's very easy to disconnect or you know, to sort of switch off and become confused and not engaged at all. So it's silly and it's light, but it's, and that's the way it's meant to be. But the humor just, and even the romance or warmth or interest in the characters just isn't there to maintain that interest, unfortunately.
Tell me a little bit more then, Stephen, about Kumail Nanjiani and Issa Rae. Nanjiani has already he's been nominated for an Oscar. What was that for?
Yeah, that was for The Big Sick. So Kumail Nanjiani is actually, I suppose, particularly to younger listeners who probably know him more from watching Silicon Valley over the last few years. It was a HBO production. And, you know, he was really incredibly funny in that. And he's a writer as well. And he's definitely kind of benefited from, you know, the greater diversity that we're seeing across, you know, cinema and in television. He was, I think he was listed actually as one of Time Magazine's 100 most influential people in 2018. And The Big Sick, I suppose, his previous film, which got him well known and got him the Oscar nomination for Best Original Screenplay, that came about with his wife, Emily Gordon, who co-wrote the film. And it was kind of semi-autobiographical about them coming together and the kind of racial misunderstandings that went on. Whereas, you know, that's not present in this film. But, you know, Issa Rae, she's really well known as well, I'd say, particularly to younger listeners, or definitely people under 30, because she's become incredibly well known for The Adventures of an Awkward Black Girl. And she really is quite a good physical comedian. She's really quite funny. And the two actors actually are the two, for me, they were the best thing about the film. I kind of didn't mind watching them. And they brought more laughs out than perhaps some other actors could have.
All right.
Yeah, they were easily the thing that came out shining from this.
What does overall, did you get enough from it to sustain it across? And it is only an hour and a half. It felt a bit longer than that to me when I was watching it, I have to admit. Sarah, did it work for you and stars?
Yeah, well, I'm saying 2 out of 5 stars. In fact, just as you mentioned there, it's an hour and a half and it felt like it could have ended at 2 separate points. We're like, ah, and there it is over. And oh, wait, tacking on this other bit. Okay, now that's over. And ultimately we came to the same ending and just it felt like, oh, Jane, we'd want to make that a bit longer. Should we throw on a couple more scenes that really didn't add anything and just made you sort of descend into farce without the humour? So 2 out of 5 stars for me.
2 from you. Stars from you, Stephen?
I give it 3 because there were some moments I did think was funny, but in particular, it's nice to see a genre that was the preserve of middle-class white characters and audiences, you know, changing up a little bit. And I suppose I want to give it a bit of support for that. So 3 out of 5.
Yeah, but we do want to laugh as well if it's a screwball comedy. Okay, so that's our first film then, Lovebirds, which is available on Netflix. Yeah. Let's move on to The County. This is from an Icelandic filmmaker called Grimur Hakonarsson. You couldn't have a different temperature of film from the one we've just spoken about, Sarah. What's the basic setup here?
Basically, this is set in Dalsmini, which is rural northern Iceland. It's a husband and wife team, Inga, played by Arndís Strón Egilsdóttir, and she's an Icelandic TV actor, and her husband is Reynir, Hinrik Olafsson. They're running a small dairy farm together, which has been the family for generations. Life is tough, and the pair are working 7 days a week. At night time, they barely have time to say to each other, oh, did you have time to call the inseminator for the cows? And they're working, and they're hugely in debt despite working hard. The co-op sort of is in charge of the area. They sell all their milk to the co-op. They must buy all their products from the co-op. Earlier, the co-op had really encouraged them to modernize and to sort of automate a lot of the processes within the farm, and it's left them hugely in debt, which they simply cannot repay. They're forced to buy everything from the co-op, which is an artificially high price. And then, unfortunately, Reynir dies in unusual circumstances, and we're sort of left wondering, is it suicide? Right. Is it a tragic accident? So his family are left wondering what's happened. And then Inga is left to run the farm herself and to deal with the co-op, who start acting in increasingly mafia ways through a lot of atmosphere. They start showing up at her house, start doing the work in the farm with no mention. Right. Even at Rainier's funeral, they're all sitting together, tightly together. So yeah. Inga has a sense that things aren't right whatsoever. She writes an article about this behaviour and about the fact that everything has to come through the co-op, and it's them who are essentially keeping the people in debt and are threatening to take over farms.
All right. Let me go to Stephen with it at this point, Sarah. And that is really kind of, nothing happens in some ways for a long, long time, and it's very silent. Just this beautiful glacial Icelandic landscape is what I find myself looking at any rate. And then suddenly it does take this twist into the discussion of the power of a local co-op. Is it even handed in how it treats that? Yeah. You know, the co-op as a support to the local community and the co-op
it
potentially.
It actually is, I think.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I think it is, Sean. I think you're right. I mean, just at the moment in the film, you know, really at one of the kind of key moments in the film, the essentially villain of the piece, I think his character's name is Igel Four. He essentially puts forward pretty good argument for the local people as to why they should support him and not Inga, who we as the viewer have come to support completely when watching the film. Yeah. So I think it, to some extent, it is even handed. But at the same time, it's what's been even handed. I think we're clearly supporting the character of Inga here. Like, this is a film essentially about a little revolution. And it starts with the price of fertilizer, and then it goes on to the price of milk. And it's kind of like a little analogy about some of the problems with industrial capitalism and the way in which large industrial groups are able to control, particularly in this case, farmers and the prices that they're able to set on goods.
Yeah, in some ways, it's looking at the argument of, you know, a very localized, self-contained, self-sufficient economy versus the big global economy, and how does a remote rural area survive within the midst of all of that? But the whole thing, Sarah, is billed as a comedy, which I hadn't seen this beforehand, and I kind of was astonished when I read that it was a comedy.
Yeah, the same here. I'd read that it was from the same director as Rams. The director's work before this, which went well, Boom Big It Can. So I saw this and I thought, wow, like you mentioned, what a really great story of female empowerment, capitalism and rural communities having to compete with larger markets and then the power that the co-ops can have. But apparently it's a comedy, and I'm glad I didn't know that before I saw it. There was nothing here that was unfunny. There was nothing here that was very try hard and fell. But actually, any moments that could be class is comedic. I'm thinking particularly here of a moment when Inga slaps a rake of cow poop on a co-op mafia enforcer's car. She also, using her fertilizer dispenser, plants milk on the co-op's headquarters. And like, maybe that was comedic, but in that moment I was like, right on. What the hell else is she meant to do? She's frustrated to push to her limits. She's trying to make a stand. If it was comedic, well, I didn't find it funny because it seemed in tone with the serious subject matter, a place here, and of course there were moments of levity. You know, it was not, it wasn't, it wasn't a dark, dark film, and there were moments of lightness, but comedy, it wasn't. Not that it wasn't an excellent story.
Stephen,
if this, you know, if this is comedy in Iceland, then I don't know what like their dark dramas are like, you know, because the laughs were few and far between. I mean, some of those were great scenes. I really love the scene where Inga gets to spray the milk on the this office of the co-op, but this is a dark film, you know, even in terms of the way it's lit, and you know, the way the interiors are lit and everything about it kind of brings you to this kind of sparse gray, cold and lonely place. And I was looking to see where the humor was, and it's not that it, like, it, you know, it doesn't lack anything for that. But definitely it wasn't a comedy.
Yeah, and certainly I think there are lots of parallels with rural communities in Ireland. I think you could see that. And we'll all want to go and visit Iceland. Yeah. The Icelandic Tourist Board must be delighted with this film because it looks like a beautiful place to be. Stars from you, Stephen, first this time.
I thought this was a really thoughtful, intelligent cinematic analysis of something in Icelandic culture. It was 4 out of 5 for me.
And what are you saying, Sarah?
I'm saying 4 to 5 as well. Beautiful, atmospheric, lovely, gentle commentary, and a story of a woman essentially finding her freedom despite being shackled by farms and familiar relationships.
Okay, joke. And that's available, I think, is it? I'll just double check that. I think it's Curzon Home Cinema. I'll check that. Yeah, Curzon
Home Cinema. Yes, that's it as well. Yeah, it's available from tomorrow.
Yeah, available
on Curzon Home Cinema.
Right, let's move on then. Two documentaries, actually, and each of you has seen each one of these separately, if you like. First of those is When Women Won, a documentary from Anna Rogers about the Together for Yes campaign in the 2018 referendum to repeal the Eighth Amendment. Sarah, you saw this one, funded by the Together for Yes campaign. So I guess we know what perspective we're going to get here.
Yeah, absolutely. This is Together for Yes approached Anna Rogers, an Invisible Thread film, who have also made the story of Yes, about a marriage equality documentary, and that was released a couple years previously. So this is a 48-minute documentary that is tasked with telling a story of the Together for Yes campaign. And so it's first things first, it's told through the perspectives of the... We open with the fact that women believe that it was them who repealed the Eighth Amendment. And yes, in fact, that is true. So throughout this film, it's not just sat with interviews of the people in head office, but it uses a huge amount of archival footage, both from people who are in rural communities, from newspapers, their bloopers and outtakes. And it runs through 35 years... of history in the space of 10 minutes. It really is a complete overview of how this movement came to be and then how it was the referendum came to be won. So within, I think, 10 minutes it was, we had gone from like 1980s up until like 2016, 2017. It really whizzed through a lot of the seismic moments and legal decisions and political outcomes.
Right. Well, let's listen to a clip that gives us a sense of, it gives us a feeling of the 1980s. In fact, Gráinne Griffin from the Abortion Rights Campaign explains what Irish women during the 80s and 90s had to do in order to access abortion.
There was such an incredible silence around abortion in Ireland back then in the 80s and the 90s. Travel to the UK was the only option. I mean, information was currency and it was so very hard to come by. And then combine it with the fact that it had to be carried out in absolute secrecy, it really was incredibly difficult. But women are incredibly resilient and incredibly resourceful. And out of those difficulties, you did see these incredibly inspiring and very much underground movements of women who came forward and organized to help other women. So there were systems, there were numbers, there were names that were passed. There were calls made in phone boxes, ask for a particular person, someone will meet you at the boat, they'll be wearing a red coat. You know, people put women up in their houses, they brought them to clinics. They took strangers in and they helped them because that's what solidarity is and that's what enabling access is and that's what it took. That's what ensured that people could access abortion and did access abortion.
That's a clip there from When Women Won, Gráinne Griffin from the Abortion Rights Campaign. It was the voice that you heard within that. Sarah Taff-McGuire has seen this documentary film for us. As I said, funded by the Yes campaign itself.
Yeah.
So obviously we get one perspective here. Is that a problem? I mean, that it doesn't... I didn't want to rehash the whole debate again.
Yeah,
but
it's not a problem.
Did you need to hear the other side of the argument? Or did,
No, not at all. I mean, why would you need to relive a campaign that was already dragged out over 35 years? That's been done. I think here what they want to say is to capture the movement and what happened and from the people who were there. I think it's not totally just a showreel or promotional material for the campaign. They do want to discuss the reality of it. We do have access to the women speaking candidly about some difficult moments, particularly the poster saga, where people were very annoyed that the No side had their posters up in advance. Orla O'Connor, who's the head of the National Women's Council of Ireland, very frankly says how fearful she was that at the launch of the campaign it was extremely difficult to get public figures to come out and voice their support for a Yes side. So we do hear about the campaign difficulties, but this documentary is 48 minutes long, and I'm not quite sure why it's so short. I know other films like The Story of Yes were of a similar length, and Amnesty did a documentary about the campaign, which is 20 minutes long. But there is just 35 years of history, a dense campaign with involving huge numbers of women and personal stories to fit into such a space of time was, to be honest, a missed opportunity. To maybe, for, as I mentioned, it was a campaign about women all across the country. This could have been a great opportunity to bring women into HQ and go further into why campaigns were launched. They say that the posters, the wording of the posters annoyed people. How was the decision made? So I think a missed opportunity perhaps to allow for reflection, pause, analysis, and instead whizzes through. We heard Gráinne speaking there about the, life in the 80s and 90s, and then she speaks about the founding of the abortion rights campaign. I would have loved to hear a little bit more of this rich, deep story rather than whizzing and rushing through it to give context. I think it would be great to go more behind HQ and hear about those stories.
Yeah, and indeed, I know that you also expressed some reservations around the absence of migrant voices.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the thing is, this was a campaign about four women to not even, no political campaign is ever perfect, to not acknowledge that some migrants felt unhappy that how they were particularly really harmed wasn't mentioned, and there was no mention about what needs to be done next. I mean, the 72-hour waiting period, about conscientious objection, there are real issues that the campaign, Abortion Rights Committee, are still working on that aren't really even alluded to as a next step. So I felt it was sort of an artificial cutoff point and a lack of discussion about what the issues are now and what next for the campaign.
You wanted more, but overall, Stars, would you recommend seeing this?
Oh, absolutely. Definitely see it. It's such a feat that Anna Rogers has made what is admitted to be a traumatic, difficult time for women into a beautiful, happy, positive and deeply moving film. So really well done. Excellent production qualities. 3.5 out of 5 because, again, would it like to be less rushed, a little longer, a little more analysis and a little more reflection on what needs to be done now, even 5 minutes on it.
And that'll be available free from the IFI player from 25. IFIplayer.ie. Finally then, Women Make Film. This is from the filmmaker Mark Cousins. We spoke to him about this last year. 840 minutes long in total. I doubt you got to watch all 840 minutes. But basically what's happening in this, it's a series of documentary films really, isn't it, Stephen?
Yeah, it is. It's a series that will be released in 5 blocks of 3 hours. And I was only privy to the first block, so that's 3 hours long. But like, to be honest, Sean, just from watching that block, I was just so pleased to see this documentary. It's really, really, really like timely, an epic documentary, and it's going to influence anybody with an interest in cinema, you know, not just women, anybody at all, for years to come.
Yeah, but essentially, what is the story that Mark's cousin, an untold story that he's telling here of female filmmakers?
This is something he's done before. It's kind of an academic trend anyway that Cousins is, I suppose, he's part of as a film critic kind of on the outside. And his previous documentary series, which was 14 hours long, called The Story of Film and Odyssey, he said that the story of film had been told from a white, male, Western perspective, particularly an American one. So the history of cinema was, to Cousins, racist by omission. And he was quite right. He, in this film, says that, you know, cinema is sexist by omission. And he doesn't say it this time because he has Tilda Swinton and numerous other great ladies narrating the documentary. You know, typically for Cousins, if anyone knows his stuff, like The Eyes of Orson Welles or The Story of Film, his documentaries are non-linear. And I think when I was younger, I had a bit more difficulty with that, but I really respect his, how you know, Cousins analyzes films. That, but at the same time, I have to say that this is not a direct history of women in cinema. And just a quote from Tilda Swinton, you know, she's saying, you know, this is not a film about directors' lives. It's not a chronological history. You know, it's not asking why women's films are better than men's. This is a documentary that wants to show people how women have understood the world through the art of cinema.
Yeah, and in fact, the way he tells the story is rather than chronologically saying, "Well, here's the first woman who made a film, here's the next one, etc., etc." He does it as if it were a film. Here are some great openings.
Absolutely, yeah.
Here are some great middle acts, you know, etc., etc. Okay,
he's definitely more from the Jean-Luc Godard history of cinema school than something more conventional.
Yeah, and I suppose to really appreciate this, every time there's a voiceover narration, it's there's something happening on the screen that's been commented on, so it's quite difficult to get a sense of it without seeing
it really
what's
is.
Happening.
Yeah,
as well
it's incredibly visual. It's incredibly visual. Yeah.
So you'd recommend this, and you'd go for all five parts, I'd say.
Yeah, I would. Like, I'm going to try and see the other parts now. I know some of them were screened in the UK, I think, way back in 2018. But you know, it opens up people's eyes to so many films and filmmakers that they won't have heard of. You know, from the Soviet Union in the 70s, in Kazakhstan, you know, in China in the 50s. And it's really something that will, I suppose, allow, again,
that's
just
great.
A quote from the film, people to look through the cinema through the eyes of women.
That's Women Make Film, a very long series of documentaries, but worth it, according to... did I ask you for stars? I think you're five.
Oh, sorry, Sean.
Five out of five.
This is brilliant. Yeah.
5 out of 5, it's brilliant, says Stephen Boyd. And it's available through the British Film Institute Player and Curzon Home Cinema. They're going to release all five parts on a one part per week basis. Stephen Boyd and Sarah Taff-McGuire are film reviewers this evening.